It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. We have Cynthia Hauswinder on the line at the offices of the Lakeville Journal. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm damp. How are you?
I'm ready for the day.
All right.
Just about time.
A long, wet one, it sounds like.
Ready for the day. Of course, today we'll talk about the real estate section and also a full compass, which is separate from the paper. But we'll start off right on the front page of the Lakeville Journal. In green, no bus routes in the paper.
Which is such a heartbreak for many parents. But boy, I have to tell you, those bus routes are a lot of work. And back in the day, Fran Paddock used to type up from scratch all those hundreds and hundreds of, you know, stopping at every single house. It was incredible the work she did. And we were lucky enough that Michelle at the All-Star Bus Company would send us these beautiful documents, and we could still just copy-paste them, but still a lot of work. So, but really worth it, because parents really look to the Lakeville Journal to get their bus routes. So we are very sorry this year that we are not able to provide those. But the information just is not available yet. There's still too much that's unknown. So the bus company said, please, parents, do call your school or check the Region 1 website, and the information should be there for you.
And what they found out from the survey anyway in Region 1, that anywhere from, 40 to 45% of the parents were going to drive their kids to school.
Which, from the survey, as you and I know, is not that far off from what it had been. A lot of parents have chosen to drive their children to school, in part because it's a big region and some of the buses would have to do a fairly large loop, so that what might be a 5-minute drive for a parent to take their children, especially if there's multiple children, could be a 45-minute trip on the bus. So, you know, bus riding is complex, and it's a wonderful service to have available. And certainly it's a beautiful thing that the bus stops at your house whether your child is there or not, and it's always available for you.
All right, couple of protests and marches, actually, at the post offices in Lakeville and Salisbury over the last weekend.
Right, and I believe there were protests all over the country. And it's not really a protest truly, in the sense that they're not protesting something the Postal Service has done. They were standing there really in support of the post offices and some reforms that had been proposed by the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, which he has pulled back on and said, we'll wait until after the election so that there's no possibility of somebody accusing the post office of having changed the outcome of the election.
All right. I did an interview with Lisa Carter about a week ago, and it's funny. I'm looking at the story that Patrick Sullivan has, and Region 1 schools in a good place to reopen. And one thing that we always talk about when we finish with Lisa is all the work that the administration has done throughout the area with the high school and with the local schools to get set to open. And what Lisa Carter really recommends to everybody is this is a snapshot in time. You just don't know what's going to happen in the future. So be prepared for anything, basically.
I mean, really, it can change from day to day. Yeah. And we have an interesting story beneath that by Deborah Alexinas. So Patrick had interviewed Lisa Carter, and she's laying out what essentially, you know, every school has a very detailed plan. Yeah. Lisa's laying out what is the general plan for the regional schools. But below that, Deborah Alexinas, at the beginning of the pandemic, had interviewed a professor at Bard College, Matthew Jung, who is now Baruch College. And it was a study that was being done by Grinnell College in Iowa, and now Baruch. And they found, in a way it sounds so obvious, but it's not. What they found was, and they worked with a lot of students to talk about actual student behavior, and what they found was it matters a lot what the schools plan, but all the planning is meaningless if the students congregate and infect each other. And what one thing that they found was a lot of schools are saying maybe we should cut down, you know, close down the gyms and the dining halls and the libraries. And what they found in their study was that's actually a bad idea, because it leaves the students a lot more unstructured time, whereas if they're in the dining hall and the dining hall is properly set up with social distancing, et cetera. But, boy, it's a tricky, tricky, complicated thing. And think about all the colleges and high schools there are just in Connecticut, and then spread it out across the entire globe. And it's going to be, unfortunately, a great way to collect data, but you know, we can only hope that everyone will do their best and that students will step up, which so far I think that we're sensing that young people take it a little bit less seriously than their elders.
Well, there is reason to be somewhat optimistic.
Well, be optimistic, but I guess what we don't want, and what Lisa Carter doesn't want, is people to think that this is going to be an error-free event. It's not.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
There's going to be things that happen. There's going to be errors made by students, maybe by teachers. There's going to be some mistakes made. There's possibility of infection coming up. Just realize that they're doing everything they possibly can within their powers to make things go as normal as possible.
And it is entirely possible that now that everybody has been through what they have been through, they're going to be a little more able to work with. It's like, okay, you got to adjust this. This is what we have all hopefully learned in the last 6 months. You got to adjust. It's not black or white. You got to adjust.
One thing that that Deb says in the article is students are going to have to make the choice. It's not just like, well, I don't really feel like wearing a mask and I think I'm going to be fine. The question is this: either you're going to wear a mask or we're going to go back to being students at home remotely staring at our computer screens. And I think that that's a pretty big carrot that we hope that the students will pay attention to.
All right, Patrick Sullivan has another story. The hearings have begun over the Eversource rate hike, and this will go on for quite some time here.
It will, and you know, this is a very special Eversource issue. There's a lot of conversation about this, and I hate to say it, but eventually the electric company will always get its rate hike. But Eversource had actually put in its rate hike with the July bill, and then the governor, Ned Lamont, and our Attorney General, William Tong, who's very activist, had come back to PURA, which is the regulatory authority for the utilities, and actually the chairman of PURA is somebody that Lamont had put in place. She is, you know, to the degree that, you know, she's of course independent, but she is a person that he's worked with. And they said, this is not going to be okay. And especially right after they announced the rate hike, you know, literally within days, Tropical Storm Isaias hit and the power was out. And I would say generally, as you read this issue, you know, and a lot of people are defending Eversource and saying, like, oh, it was a really bad storm. But, you know, we've had three of the biggest storms in the state's history in the last 10 years. And what the Attorney General and the governor are saying is, this is not the end of it. And we've given you have the second highest electric rates that you're charging in the country, second only to Hawaii, more expensive than Alaska. And then the fourth on the list is Massachusetts, which is also an Eversource electric state. So they're asking a lot of pointed questions. I hate to say it, probably the rate hike is going to go through. And then there's another planned rate hike that they're requesting for 2021. So let's hope that at least there is some improvements to customer service and not just corporate pay.
And very quietly, North Canaan's Becton Dickinson, they're there with doing what they've been doing. It's even more important than ever.
Right. They make syringes, and it seems so silly when you think about it, but they're one of the biggest makers of syringes in the nation. I was lucky enough to take a tour of BD a few years ago. It's really like a James Bond movie. It's so modern and, you know, very conscious of corporate espionage. You can't bring your phone in there, and you know, everybody's wearing little hazmat suits, and there's robots flying around all over the place. It's very cool. And of course, they're always hiring, but it's a long, you know, it's a long day there, but great benefits. But they are now ramping up to make enough vaccines, syringes, so that when we have a COVID vaccine, they will be ready to be able to put the serum into our arms. So very exciting.
Interesting story on page A2 that I was talking with somebody from Armenia about. It's funny that it's in the paper this week, last week, and that is we here in Sharon know, of course, the helicopter rule in Sharon, but with the onset of COVID-19, with the building of Silo Ridge and other things, the helicopter travel in and out of Armenia is really amazing, and it's a pretty simple rule they have out there. If you're going to fly a helicopter in, you need a legitimate helipad and stuff like that. But these helicopters are coming in and out and in and out.
Right, and there had been, I think, as you said, you know, if you go back in the archives of the Lakeville Journal, which are online through the Scoville Library, there have been some very big kerfuffles about helicopter use in the past. I think there was Jim Sinclair's house in Sharon, down at the Armenia border, and then in Cornwall, I think the big Wall Street financier, Saul Steinberg, had tried to put a helipad in, and actually I think succeeded in putting the helipad at what is now the Cornwall Castle. So we have a history here of being activists against helicopters. Of course, in Sharon, there's also LifeStar, which comes in to the hospital, And then there's every now and then you get some military helicopters that fly by. So there's not, it's not like there's not helicopters coming around here, but I think people would prefer not to have a lot of overhead traffic with people coming up to their weekend houses and leaving. And the article that we have, which we picked up from our Militant News newspaper, which is covering this, in, which is in hearings now in Armenia, is I think there's something called Keen Farm, which is a horse farm, and yep. I think there's a lot of helicopter traffic going on there, too.
And it's going to be interesting to see how it breaks down if they decide to allow Silo Ridge to build like a heliport and put in maybe one or two places where heliports can be where they can come in. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops or if they're just going to be banned altogether.
Right, and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, basically has said it's fine with us as long as you have a real landing pad or a real landing strip.
Yep.
And the town of Armenia is now looking at its regulations and going, oh, don't we have a rule against this? It'll be interesting to see.
All right, the Appalachian Trail and COVID-19.
We've been holding these stories for a month or so, so we apologize that they're a little backdated, but it's always interesting around here to talk to the Appalachian Trail hikers. And, of course, this was an unusual year in the sense that the Appalachian Trail was technically closed, so you couldn't really see the same quantity of through hikers that you normally see. But having said that, there were still plenty of hikers. If you went to LeBons, you'd see at least one or two. And I would have liked to actually have interviewed more of them. We've just been so tight for space this year. But what an interesting year to find out. You know, I'm assuming that there are a lot of people who were out of work this summer and thought, well, I guess I'll hike the trail, and then the trail is technically closed. But as we know up here, the trails have been extremely crowded, with people coming up from all over for day hikes and for week hikes. So interesting stories from two very different hikers.
All right. And on page A4, storm damage discussed by the Cornwall Board of Selectmen.
So again, throughout this issue, you're going to hear again and again, Selectmen very angry at Eversource, and everybody understands it was a big storm. However, they had promised after the storms in 2011 and 2012 to have better communications. And I would say the general sense we got is that the communication was significantly worse than it had been even in those really bad storms where the power was out for a number of days. So all the selectmen in all of our towns very angry that they were supposed to have a liaison at Eversource. Maria Horn did a phenomenal job of checking in with them on behalf of constituents, taking phone calls all the time. And what they were finding was actually Brent Collison had a very interesting email to Sharon residents, and he put in the text of some of his conversations with his Eversource rep, where he would call them and like a day would go by and the guy would never get back to him. And there's Brent, you know, fielding phone calls from people who are without power in Sharon for a week and had nothing to tell them. In Cornwall, they were extra angry because the outage map was incorrect, so that people couldn't even phone in and report their outages to Eversource, which is extremely frustrating and hard for everybody.
Now, you've got an interesting story during this pandemic, life as a college student during a pandemic.
And, of course, we're just starting up on college again. The Cornwall Library, doing a lot of interesting programs this summer, had a Zoom program on August 15th with four Cornwall students who talked about how they functioned in the spring semester as college students. And, you know, as with that article by Deb Alexinas on the front page, a lot of how your school experience goes depends on your own personal motivation level. And I would say I'm super motivated now. I'm not sure I was quite this organized and motivated when I was a college student. But I think that it will be an interesting moment where college students are going to learn it's harder on you if you put your paper off until the last minute, especially if you're at home and there's not that same opportunity to stay up all night with your parents in the other room saying, are you still up? Still working on that paper?
I want to go to the viewpoint page and the opinion pages.
Let me very quickly though point out, of course,
yes.
Janet Manko, our publisher and editor-in-chief, her husband Bill, lovely guy, passed away earlier this week during our deadline. And Bill was really a great person. Happily, his wife and daughter were able to be with him in his last hours. But so Janet is not, she's not fully working with us right now. She's taking a few days to make arrangements. So if you are trying to get in touch with Janet, you can email me at CynthiaH@LakevilleJournal.com. Or you can also, if it's easier to remember, send an email to editor@. That's for letters to the editor and for columns or for general questions.
And Peter Steiner never sourced the comic that is in
that was very
which is very funny. But you know, Brent Colley also is calling them NeverSource in his. He probably picked it up from Peter, but I think a lot of people actually are calling them NeverSource. And you know, you hate to come down on them hard. It was a really bad storm, but I think the general consensus is they did not step up. And I think one of the questions they're talking about in the hearings that are going on right now with the regulatory authority is, and what the guys on the ground were saying was, you guys have the second highest rates in the country. Your electrical system is very out of date, and corporate pay has gone very, very high while boots on the ground has been cut back. So these are all not good things. So we've got a column from Chris Powell where he's kind of talking a little bit more on the Eversource side and sort of saying, you know, this is all a big boondoggle for the politicians. Chris, always a very interesting guy, always has an interesting, thoughtful, well-informed take on issues. DeGaulle is talking about something which is equally important, which is we need some really strong political parties, and if we're going to have outcomes on elections that we like, we need to really support our political parties. John Swan, who has written for us periodically, is talking about the fires in California and comparing it to Anton Chekhov's The Wood Demon. Very thoughtful, interesting column from a guy who's a journalist and a poet. And then we have some interesting letters. Again, Carrie Babigian, a young person who's my neighbor over in Salisbury, talking about climate change and a reminder that, you know, climate change, not a joke, happening very slowly, but definitely happening. And these hurricanes that are coming up are getting worse and worse as the planet and the waters warm.
And, of course, your editorial about Eversource being held accountable.
Right, and sort of reiterating some of the things that we've actually just been talking about again and again, but, you know, really is a big deal. And, again, you know, these electric companies usually do get their rate hike eventually, but let's hope that our very activist attorney general has some impact on it. And then another child, a 10-year-old from Cornwall named Lou Price, sent in a letter talking about how great Gordon Ridgway and the Cornwall selectmen were. And in Cornwall, as in many of the towns, when we're guessing that the power is going to go out again this winter at some point. If you are without power, do go to your firehouse. There's usually still some kind of power there. You can charge up, and you can also check in with your town officials. And one thing Brent Colley did say in his email that he sent out, which is a very good point, is if you're trapped on your road, don't go out and try to cut the trees yourself. They might actually be on a wire, and you might end up electrocuting yourself. So you hate to say it, but stay put until you hear something.
All right, we have about 4 minutes left, but you have an actual very, very big compass in the paper this week.
We do, and we have the small compass. We've had compass in what we call the broadsheet, which is the larger size format paper. So we have the American Mural Project, run so ably by Ellen Griesdick, and now with Amy Nguyen, and they have their fundraising concert online with Paul Winter from the Paul Winter Consort, which is one of the super respected musical groups from up here, very interesting group of musicians in it. And then we have a full-size, what we call the tabloid compass, which we're trying to do once a month, and we're very happy to say we got ad support for it, so thank you to all our advertisers and to our readers, and a beautiful photo of Emmerich Carney doing a workout over at Studio Lakeville, where he is a trainer, but where he's also been working out. And I think everybody's kind of been thinking about, like, how do we decorate during, how do we exercise during quarantine? And he's managed to stay in incredible shape, so you can find out his story by reading Hunter Lyle's interview with him. Jenny Hansel, we had talked earlier in the summer about, the idea was, people are renting out their houses. How do you decorate your house? One easy way is with books. And then, of course, COVID happened and so much of the world changed. So Jenny did interview Allison Kist, who's a decorator who's in New York and Lakeville, Matthew Patrick Smythe, who's one of the most famous decorators in the country, and we're lucky enough to have him in Salisbury, and my friend Dana Krause, who has one of the most exquisite houses you've ever seen, and talks to them about how to decorate with books and not about, like, buying books by the yard, but really taking the books that you love and decorating with them. Patrick Sullivan, a very funny story about sitting around watching TV and studying, taking the great courses online. An unexpected, very funny story from Alex Wilburn about playing Catan, the board game, with his family, because Alex has been living with his parents in Falls Village, and they get into some very active debates over, you know, sheep and bricks, and have been having a really good time with it. And Alex explains why all of his young friends are also playing it. Fred Baumgarten, a beautiful meditation on migration and the change of the season and the butterflies and the birds. Just a really poetic, interesting story. A lot of the estates of the Hudson River Valley are opening up again. It's a great time of year to take a walk. If you're worried about the crowds on the trails, and if, like me, you don't like bugs, you can walk around these beautiful hundreds of acre estates that many of them look over the Hudson River Valley. Jeff Seitz gives you choices of a few you can look at. Again, Emera Kearney and his training regimen, fairly interesting. Lena Zeto, who was an intern with us, wrote a really wonderful story about learning a language using the internet and books and other sources. And, of course, it helps that her boyfriend is French and sent her a French sentence every day. Olivia Montoya, who's our staffer, is doing the calendar, which we hadn't been doing during the summer when so many events were canceled. It's online, updated frequently, but also we're trying to get it back in the print edition. The world's easiest recipe for pie crust. It is 100% foolproof, I promise you, and it makes great pizza. And my daughter, who loves locked room mysteries and has a very interesting story explaining what a locked room mystery is, explaining some of the classic best books that she's read about it, but also the Two of Us Productions in Copake often does radio dramas of suspense thrillers, including some by John Dixon Carr, who is considered the master of the locked room. And then we have Tricorner Real Estate, which is still going strong. You would have thought that all the real estate in the region had been sold, but it's not. And I have friends who are still looking for, you know, houses to buy. It's still an interesting moment to look at houses and think about what you can do with them. Even though real estate sales went up 350% in terms of dollar volume this year.
Well, they can go up to Music Mountain.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, Salisbury and Sharon had the highest increases, but Falls Village and I think North Canaan actually saw a decrease in total sales. So, as Jill says, go look in Falls Village and North Canaan for those real estate treasures.
I just love, we'll wrap this up, but I want to talk about the comparisons. You've got side by side Franklin Delano Roosevelt's house at the Vanderbilt Mansion. And what people should do when they are open in here, you can fully do it. I did this on one day. Do it in one day. Go to one house and then go to the other. See the difference in what's considered a mansion for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and then step into the Vanderbilt Mansion. And if you do it on the same day, your jaw will drop.
Yeah, I've actually done the entire Route 9. There's a list of famous estates on Route 9 as you drive through the Hudson River Valley. You can do the whole thing in one day. You can't really, you know, linger.
No.
But there's some incredible, like, and as you say, large and small, but all interesting.
All right, Cynthia, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Give our best to Janet.
I will. Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Try and name it, tricornernews.com.